Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with I'm flying without a script today, y'all.
This is awesome.
I've only done 100-something shows
so
at this point.
We'll help you out. The show is called Kick It Naturally.
Yeah.
My name is T.C.
Hale.
You're Kenna McEnroe.
I totally forgot who you are.
And then next to us is going to be Hottie Batati.
Hottie Will Schmidt. But he's coming in on Skype.
Yeah, but still, it's part of the script.
Okay, all right.
So we moved. We moved our studio. We moved our offices. And it was not fun.
It was hell on earth.
It was not a good time to move all those items. But we're here, but everything's still packed up, so we don't know where the scripts are, and so we'll have a fun time today with the show. We'll have Kenna do announcements, and maybe even...
Maybe I might get some right, I might get some wrong.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Okay, but Kick It Naturally, T.C. Hale, he's my boss.
Hey, Will, what's going on, buddy?
There's Will via Skype.
Hi. You guys hear me all right?
Yeah, we're all with you.
He looks cute.
We're fancy, yeah. It's good times. We can see him on video. You guys can't see him on video, but you can't see us either. So it really doesn't matter.
Will's in his underwear, you guys.
And my other clothes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So. With his clothes on top of him.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing he does. So we're doing part two.
Let me tell you about Facebook.
Oh, okay. There's other stuff in the
script.
I don't know. All right, what's up?
Okay. I am an actress. You think I would have this memorized after
105
times. So, if you haven't joined us on Facebook yet, what the heck is the holdup? Go ahead and join us at Kick It in the Nuts.
Yeah.
And that's where we put all of our show questions, topics. You guys can ask us any questions. We'll cover them on the show. If you have a show topic, we can even do that. That might be fun since we're running out. And today,
it seems like it takes longer for her to do it when she doesn't have a script.
Because I just like to improvise. I just like to talk.
Right.
But today we have part two on vaccines.
Yeah. So if you didn't hear part one, go back and listen to that on iTunes or on Stitcher, because we covered a lot of stuff and we're just going to kind of get to more questions that the listeners had today. But we covered a lot of good stuff. And if you don't hear part one, you won't even know if we like vaccines or we don't like vaccines or we're like maybe use some of them, but maybe not others. Who knows?
And we're going to leave that up as a mystery.
Yeah.
So you have to go back and listen.
Right. So, Will, unless you have anything that you wanted to recap from part one, we can jump right in.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess a quick recap to be fair to the people that that listened last week but want to just rehash it was that we were not conclusive about... like, should you or should you not vaccinate? And we thought, at least as far as what I remember me saying, is that it's kind of a case-by-case basis on what vaccine you're talking about, what disease you're talking about, what environment and risk factor that you are, depending on, like, where you live and who you are. So it's not like a, yeah, we like them, or no, we don't. It's like a more nuanced thing.
Yeah, I think if I had an opinion about anything, it's that you really have to educate yourself about what's going on and look at both viewpoints. Because when you educate yourself, you're not actually going to find real answers. You're going to find viewpoints from both sides of the fence. And we do know that from both sides of the fence, people are yelling. Like, they're yelling from both sides. And they're real upset about it. But this kid that you're thinking about vaccinating, you're going to have this kid for a really long time, and in most cases, so you might as well take a week or so at least to just do some homework and understand what's going on. And so that's what we're going to do today, is just kind of talk a little bit more about that, and we'll answer some questions.
All right. So, Jennifer, why do I get sick every time I get a flu shot? I also usually end up with egg-sized lump at the injection site. Rich, should I get a flu shot? Why or why not? Thanks.
No. Next question. So, you know, that is something that you hear from a lot of people. Hey, I got the flu shot and it gave me the flu. I don't want that.
Yeah. And, you know, people like that have made vaccines ever since they started making them always, there's always like a risk, even like for the ones for measles, which is like a really like generally accepted to be a very effective one. Sometimes people get measles from that, and it's most of the people don't, but sometimes it does happen, and that's part of the risk factor of it. And you got to look at like cost benefit of it. I personally never get flu shots. I'd rather just like take the risk of possibly catching the flu rather than certainly being exposed to like an immune aggravator.
Right. And another thing that's important, especially with flu shots, is that we know that flu shots contain mercury, and we know that mercury is not something that you want in your body. Like there's a chance of you getting the flu without a flu shot, but there's a 100% chance of you putting more mercury in your body with the flu shot. The other thing is that the effectiveness of the flu shot is not impressive by any standards of anything. And another thing to consider when you're weighing the risk benefit is that there's all these different strands of flu out there, and there's no way to put them all into one flu shot without completely poisoning you. So what they do is they kind of select the ones that seem to be the hippest strands at the time, and they put those in, and then they kind of announce later on, well, it kind of turns out that this year's flu shot is only 30% effective, and of those strands, only 18% of the people are immune to those strands. You know, the numbers are not that impressive.
Yeah. I would say like there's other vaccines that maybe make more sense as far as like potentially fatal diseases or diseases like mumps that could cause infertility. It's probably worth like the little infliction of a small amount of mercury to like prevent like a seriously life-threatening or life-damaging disease. Whereas with the flu, yeah, maybe if you're a baby, it's potentially life-threatening, but you know, it might not be just the cost, the cost-benefit ratio.
Are you saying if you're an infant or if you're like a sissy?
If you're a baby. Well, I mean, if you are a sissy with a really immune system like the boy in a bubble, like you definitely wouldn't want a flu shot, but...
Right. So I like to see people take steps to improve their immunity. And some of the steps are really easy and it's just not known in the mainstream. But we have an episode on the common cold that we kind of teach you how to look at your physiology to have an understanding of, is your physiology set up for your immune system to function correctly? And if it's not, how to make simple changes to set yourself up to be in a good position. You know, there's a lot of things, just like eating a lot of sugar can kind of turn off your immune system. Taking a lot of vitamin D can turn it off. Now, vitamin D is beneficial for the immune system, but when you have too much, you're kind of shutting it off. So we teach people how to do that, and that just seems like a better idea than the high amount of risk that goes along with the flu shot for the low amount of benefit that seems to be coming from them.
Yeah.
All right. Amy from Covington, Louisiana. I'm curious about vaccinations and SIDS. How many babies have died from SIDS that were not vaccinated? Christy, that'd be a great study.
Yeah, I really would love to know this. And this is very interesting to me. And I couldn't find anyone who had done any type of research to find this. It may be out there. I just didn't have a good time finding it. But I did find a very interesting paper on PubMed. So we'll put some show notes on kickitnaturally.com, and you can find this show, and we'll put all the links that we talk about because we have kind of quite a few on this one. But I found this article that talks about ranking the countries according to their infant mortality rate, which is, you know, how many babies are dying in their infancy. And it also listed how much the people are vaccinating, like the rate at which everybody vaccinates or not so many people vaccinate type of thing. And in like 34 nations, the five with the best, with the lowest amount of infant deaths were the ones who only did 12 vaccine doses, which was the lowest number of all the nations. And of course, the U.S. does, like, I don't know, I think it's 39 now or something like that. I think it was 26 at the time of this particular paper. But it was interesting that the lowest infant mortality deaths were also the people using the lowest number of vaccines. And to take that a step further, we can look at the U.S., which had a higher rate and a higher rate of vaccination. And you look at Mississippi, and Mississippi is, they had the highest rate of vaccination. Like, that's their biggest bragging thing, is we have a higher vaccination rate than any other state in the country. They just so happen to have the highest infant mortality rate, the most amount of infant deaths. Now, I'm not saying that that's a cause. There's no way to know that. That's just, you know, a correlation. But that's a pretty big correlation to think about.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is important not to collapse correlation with causation, but it is definitely an interesting thing if, like, that's going on. And I doubt that, or I think you'd be very, very hard-pressed to find, like, a lot of different research articles proving that vaccines, like, cause deaths, because, like, or even if some people were straightforward, be like, oh yeah, so like every kid that I vaccinated, like, died this year.
Right, that's not gonna.
You know, they're less. I think that there are honest people for sure in medicine, but I also think that a lot of companies and hospital policies and government regulation has been created to protect the practice of vaccination and to also not. To not blame them if a baby dies, because it's not necessarily their fault if a baby died the day after it got vaccinated. That's not, honestly, it's not their fault, but it is possible that it did cause death, you know?
And this is kind of takes us back to our viewpoint a little bit that we covered last week. And that is, the reality is that Mississippi has a lot of lower income areas where a lot of the other problems that we talked about, poor nutrition, the inability to have nutrient levels high in the food that's being eaten, and now the kid doesn't have the resources to deal with the toxins that are coming in with the vaccines. We talked a lot about, you know, the people that may be having these problems from vaccines could be the people who cannot deal with the toxicity level. So it could be a combination of, yes, they're vaccinating more than everybody and more babies are dying, but it could be a situation where maybe there's more babies that don't have the resiliency to deal with the toxic load coming in from the vaccination.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important too, because there is a lot of really blatant evidence showing, like, how valuable vaccines have been in the past in preventing, like, epidemics or, like, reversing epidemics. So I know, like, in the holistic health world, there's a tendency to just jump on the idea that it's better not to vaccinate, or that they don't work, or that they're toxic. But I do think there are some real benefits to it. Another little side point, I don't know if there's a question about autism coming up, but I was just talking with my best friend who's a physician last night, and he was saying that at the time when there was all these papers coming out about the rise of autism with the increase in vaccinations, it turns out there was some reclassification as far as what it meant to be autistic, similar to a reclassification of what it meant to have high cholesterol. You know, we talk about, like, oh, they lowered the bar for what it means to have high cholesterol.
We talked last week how they changed the classification of polio to make it look better for them.
Yeah, but there's also a change in the classification of what it meant to be autistic. Like, it used to be, like, just a specific set of symptoms presenting, and they kind of broadened that to include, like, oh, this is grayscale. So we could classify these other people as also autistic so that they could also – and the benefit of that – for those people was that they could then get government support and government aid for being classified autistic and get, like, other school programs and, you know, healthcare and support for them. So there's good intention behind broadening that spectrum of, like, what it means to be autistic, but then
there was also a lot of publication that came about, like, oh, there's this huge epidemic outbreak rise in autism, when in fact it's been kind of much, much more steady of a state, just the way we classified who was autistic or not.
We did talk about, someone had a question last week that on the show Underground Wellness, somebody interviewed someone who had that point of view as well. But just from looking at life, I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know anybody that was autistic at all. And now you see it constantly. I mean, I didn't know anyone who had that type of behavioral issues or emotional issues of any kind. Like in my town, we didn't know anyone like that. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about something that somebody had a thing that they shared about. It's pretty freaky, really.
And also back in the day, like ADD, you were just hyper. You were just a kid. You know, go outside and run around and work off some of the energy, you know, or whatever. You just had too much sugar or, you know, I don't know.
Right, so that's a different thing than autism and learning disabilities.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that, like, everything is changing now. Now everything has a name on it, whereas before you were just being a kid. Now there's something wrong with you.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, that's a big deal, too. I think that counts as something.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Ricky Joe from Prescott Valley, Arizona. My question is, why must they use such thick, long needles? Ouch. Because they like to hurt you.
Well, that was brought about by the foundation of We Want to Scare You. No, I don't know. I don't know that they use such needles. That might not be real.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry about that, Ricky.
Okay, Ricky. Valene. Denver, Colorado. I did not get the measles vaccine. I was so ill with measles. The doctor sent me home basically to die. They were throughout my whole body. Many neighbors came and took turns helping my parents. After such a horrible experience for my parents, every one of my siblings got the vaccines. None of them had such deadly measles.
And I think this is kind of the viewpoint that we all grew up with. And this is what I've always had. I've always had this viewpoint until I started really digging into this for this show, and that was that, well, you know, you hear stories about people that got sick because they didn't do it, and then people that didn't get sick, and I think this is a big driving force, along with a lot of bad information, that kind of makes us all just blindly go, okay, I'll do whatever I'm told to do.
Will?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I get it. I get it, and I think that there are some diseases that are like that, and some vaccines that have shown to, like, be really quite effective, and others that are maybe less effective, like the flu shot. And so, like I said before, I think we got to look at a case-by-case basis, and maybe measles is potentially a good one, because we see people get sick and some people die kind of unnecessarily, because that vaccine usually does really work for people.
Andrew. Grimsby, Northeast, Lincolnshire, UK. Interesting. Heard an interesting theory that HIV originated from the polio vaccination. And then he gives a link.
Yes, we'll put a link to that. It's there's like a documentary called The Origin of AIDS. And I didn't know about this, but I have heard other people talk about another illness that actually did not exist until the original polio vaccine caused it. And the original polio vaccine is a lot different than the one that's being used today. It actually was very problematic and actually caused a lot of people to have polio. It was that oral one. And there was even states that banned the use of the polio vaccine because in their history of that state, they had never had a single reported case of polio. And then once people started getting vaccinated, everybody was catching polio. But polio is a bit of a mess, and this is one of those things that kind of takes a lot of the credibility out of the whole system for me, because when I think of polio, most people they think, oh, a kid is going to be paralyzed, so we don't want them to have polio. But when you look at it, actual polio, the fact is that most people that get polio, the symptoms are equivalent to a cold, like it's a fever, maybe diarrhea, maybe vomiting. It lasts about a week, and then you recover 100%, and you're fully immune against polio for the rest of your life. So then when you look at the numbers, it's really only like 0.04% of the people who get polio end up with this paralysis situation. And everyone else who gets it, it's like a flu kind of a thing. They kind of went up in arms about it, and they did the vaccine, and it ended up causing more polio than anything. Now, they've since fixed it, but it's one of those things where we haven't had any cases in the Northern Hemisphere, any Canada, U.S., since like 1991 or something like that. For people that fly in with it from other countries, there's been like, I think, only 6 cases in the recorded history. And it's just one of those things that you got to wonder, do we really need to be mandating that every single person gets this? Who knows? I mean, certainly you don't want to see the epidemics come back that happened long ago, but you got to kind of wonder, as we're adding more and more things to this list that every child must have, or we're only going to let them live in the woods, we might have to start looking at some of the things that we seem to have good control over, because when the number of people are dying from vaccines, when that number is higher than the people who are dying from the actual disease, we might have to look at changing some things to balance that out. But then now
people can say, well, we haven't had any cases since 1991. So it must be the vaccine that they're giving now is, eradicating it or whatever.
Well, what they did was they, with a lot of these vaccines, especially with like smallpox too, and how they say that they eradicated it, which even with the smallpox, the disease was on a huge decline before the vaccine was even available. But what they did was when somebody got smallpox or polio, was they've mandated vaccination for their circle of people that they knew. Everyone who was around them had to get the vaccine, and that was kind of how they wiped it out. And that's kind of the thinking behind the herd vaccination, of all of us vaccinating to keep it from spreading. But now that the evidence is mounting that the vaccinations themselves are causing problems due to the high level of vaccinations that we're doing now, as we start to look at, okay, what do we back off from? That's a piece of information that we might have to look at, is that, okay, nobody's had it at all.
And that would also be a good thing, because then you could say, okay, if we stop this vaccination, then all of a sudden you start getting a polio outbreak. Okay, well then the vaccines were helping, or whatever. Or do what you said, the circle of friends, keep it small.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's really complicated. What do you think of that, Will?
I mean, I don't have the question in front of me, but I know we went on a bit of a tangent, but he did say like he had heard that the polio vaccine caused AIDS. Was that where we started with this?
Yeah, it was the polio vaccine that caused AIDS. And there is another disease, and I can't think of the name, but I did hear somebody talking about it, that it came from the viruses that they used, the virus strains that they used in that polio vaccine, and it created another disease. And as a result, this disease has killed more people than polio ever did. So that's a pretty freaky thing to think about. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the vaccine we're using now. That was the oral form of the polio vaccine that caused all these problems and caused people to have polio, and they stopped that. That's been gone a long time.
Yeah.
But this particular movie is saying that also caused other diseases, and AIDS being one of them.
Right. Well, so to respond to that question then about it, like when we look at like did that vaccine cause AIDS, it's important to know that like the science and documentation that says HIV causes AIDS is not really well documented. Like, it's not proven. And we also see that other things also cause the creation of the antibodies that are used to test if someone has AIDS or not. You can even get it from trauma. Like, those the immune response of the body that is detected in an AIDS test that is confirming you have AIDS can be generated through just damage to the body, like through like a surgery, like removal of a spleen. They're not necessarily finding a virus that says, oh, you have HIV and AIDS. They're saying, oh, there's these antibodies that your body created. And it can create them for lots of different reasons. And yeah, it definitely could create them in response to a vaccine. You know, it's an immune response that they're verifying. So we can say, like, yeah, it could cause the creation of the antibodies that we refer to as a positive test result when you're looking at, does this person have AIDS or not?
That makes sense.
But, you know, but that's not to say, oh, you have HIV, like you got that, because there's still not a good correlation between that. A really good article to read about this is if you look up raypete.com, he has an article titled Immunodeficiency, Dioxins, Stress, and the Hormones. And there you can see, like, there's a lot of really interesting stuff about how we have yet to really prove that HIV causes AIDS, or really get our grasp on our public comprehension of what AIDS is. It's an immune response that the body's going through, and it can do that for different reasons. So that can be a really refreshing and liberating thing, because some, like a lot of people in Africa that are exposed to different intestinal bacteria and exotoxins will generate those antibodies and test positive for AIDS.
When they don't have the HIV virus at all.
Yeah, it's not an HIV thing. It's like, oh, if they did like an intestinal cleanse and cleared out those exotoxins, they could come back later and test for AIDS and be negative.
Interesting.
Georgiana, assuming that you would vaccinate your child, how would you go about doing it, and what will minimize the negative impact?
Well, we talked about this a little bit last week, and you know, spacing things out, maybe allowing the kid to be as old as possible for that particular vaccine, from vaccine to vaccine, and taking steps to increase the nutrient levels of that child and having them be more resilient to be able to deal with a toxic load. But again, this is too tricky to really plan out because it really depends on so many other environmental factors of, you know, how much of a heavy metal load does the kid already have? And that can vary so greatly that that's hard to figure out. So I think that there's definitely steps that you could take to minimize by kind of spacing things out a little bit more. But again, it's just going to matter so much from person to person.
Yeah. I mean, I think we also should just play it safe and be like, you should talk to your doctor about that, you know?
All right. Alberto from Los Angeles. You guys probably already know this, but I think you have to mention the amount of vaccines given in the U.S. before a child is 6 compared to every other developed country. Average is 18. U.S. does 36. And how they started to go up after they passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act in 1986. The act took the liability away from the companies developing vaccines, and they just kept going up since then. What a coincidence. And then he lists a link that we'll post in the show notes. Which of the diseases that we are told to vaccinate against today could be fatal or induce a lifetime disability? Are any vaccines truly worth it in your mind? That's what y'all were talking about the last show, was that act that they don't have the liability anymore.
Right. So since that was the case, you know, and I think someone has a question later in the show too about, you know, new vaccines are coming out, because when you come out with a vaccine, especially if it's mandated by every kid in the country, you just became a gazillion billionaire. So they want to keep adding them. But when you look at the toxic load, that is a big deal. But since they can't be held liable, that's kind of where the system breaks down. And that's where I feel like it can't be repaired as long as that's the case, because they're going to keep wanting you to do more vaccines. They're going to keep providing information that makes it sound like it's the appropriate thing to do. And it makes it very hard to differentiate between the ones that really are important and that it could be beneficial, and the ones that are just adding more of a toxic load. You know, like Will was saying last week, that, you know, if you're not going to go to Africa, you don't need a malaria vaccine. But, you know, who knows? Maybe at some point that'll be mandated too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. And then Diana shared a link to a video and article. The CDC scientist admits destroying autism data. And then there's a link there that we'll post.
So this is the one that I was talking about. That it has a video there, too. And there's a guy that worked for the CDC. He did the science stuff. And he admits that they came up with some data that proved, especially with African-American male babies, that there was a link to these neurocognitive issues that were coming from a lot of the vaccines. And when you look at it, when you look at how many people have suffered from those types of issues, if that did come out, I mean, there really could collapse a lot of things and cause, I mean, think of how many people who would want to sue for that mm-hmm. once that was proved. So he admits that they destroyed that stuff. It's just an interesting video to watch to see that, okay, you know, because you hear so many other people have saying that, yeah, there has been data that has shown that this really is going on. And especially when you look at the doctors who work with a lot of kids and they're doing tests, you know, it's similar to us, Will, like if we took every type 2 diabetic in the country and we ran our tests on them and we saw that they were all catabolic, you know, that would be a pretty big correlation for science to then look at and say, okay, maybe this is worth putting some attention to. But that's similar to what's going on as you're looking at all of these autistic kids and you're seeing a lot of heavy metal issues in a huge percentage of them. And that doesn't mean all those heavy metals came from the vaccines, for sure. We know that. But if it's adding to that soup that that kid is dealing with, then it's important to for us as people who are deciding whether to vaccinate or not to understand that and to weigh that in as a factor when we're deciding how many do we want to do, how often do we want to do them, which kid qualifies to do that at all, and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I do think it's something that with advancing technology and screening, like it could become, they could get better at making very sophisticated choices of what child should get what vaccines, depending on things like their risk factors genetically, their toxin load, their socioeconomic state, their environment. Like there could be a lot of different things that could be done to screen a kid and be like, oh, this kid, he already has this really heavy metal load. Like we should maybe not do that. And he has this gene that makes him susceptible right. to the, you know, they could get to the point where they could screen someone like that. And I think that they eventually could even do it economically where it could be applied at a national level. Don't think that we're there yet.
Yeah, well, think about that pot that they're paying out of for everyone who gets injured. I mean, it's approaching $4 billion now. What if they took a little bit of that pot and went towards, you know, doing the stuff that you're talking about? It just seems to make sense, because something that I also did not know is that a mother can have a heavy metal load in her system, and while she's pregnant, that can transfer to the child. So when a child's born, it can already have a load of heavy metal issues in its system. So if there's a way for us to look at that, then maybe we could say, okay, this kid does not qualify to have this many vaccinations, etc. And, you know, maybe that could save some hardship.
Yeah.
We're brilliant. Did you see how we just fixed the whole thing right there?
Yeah. Now should just take it. That, you know, that test that you're talking about, work it up, develop it, take it to Congress,
and they'll say, hey, will that make us $1 billion? No, then we're not interested.
Yeah, but it will save you billions of dollars in lawsuits.
Right, yeah. But so
I am really against, though, the protection of the vaccine companies.
Yeah, it's just the worst.
To me, like, all right, well, if you're going to be awful, like with corporate capitalism, make them subject to it, too. Like, all right, if you're losing out – because, like, if I was a trainer and everyone I trained with broke their back and I was like, I don't know, it's just not that cost effective.
I'm not going to train anymore if everybody's going to sue me for a broken back.
Yeah, so I need the gym owner to make a law that says no one can sue me for breaking their back, and then I'll keep training people. Like, that is not a reasonable business model, right? Like, so to say, like, vaccines, like, oh, I'm sorry, like, the trillions of dollars you're earning is not enough to cover the damage that you're causing. Like, you should go out of business, right? You know? And
interesting thing with that is there's a, I think it's Proposition 65 in California, is this law that came out that says that anyone who manufactures a product, they have to disclose any harmful chemicals that are in that product. And that's a law. And it appears that the vaccines are exempt from that law.
That's ridiculous.
It's not that you ever see a vaccine label anyway. You don't buy it. You just get stuck in the arm.
Right. I think there's pamphlets and inserts that you can get to kind of read about them. And one interesting thing that I see from a lot of people who are educating the public about this information is they share these viewpoints and they're like, look, I got this information from the CDC website. I got this information from the insert of the vaccine, but nobody ever reads it. So there's a lot of information out there that can kind of point you to what you're really doing to the child you're choosing all these vaccinations for, but you have to take the time to actually read it and understand what's going on.
So what we really need to do is come up with a way to falsify records to say your child has had these vaccines, and then they don't have to, and they can still go to school. And in your mind, you can know, dang, I was right. They shouldn't have had those vaccines.
Right.
And
well,
they didn't.
A friend of mine told me that, because California is switching over to do what we say or move out. And she's like, there's going to be this black market of doctors who will falsify vaccinations for you for a price. And that may be the only option that's available for those who don't want to
vaccinate. Go there and the weed doctor, one-stop shop, All right, Virginia, how many fatal diseases have been able to eradicate with vaccines? My guess is a lot, maybe hundreds. And what other innovative uses for vaccines are you seeing coming in the future? For instance, we now have a vaccine for a virus that causes cancer. Do you foresee researchers identifying viruses causing or contributing to other conditions, such as diabetes, Alzheimer's, dementia, heart disease, or maybe other forms of cancer that vaccines could maybe help or hopefully prevent? Thanks, y'all.
Y'all, I love saying y'all. I grew up where we say y'all.
Oh, yeah.
When you say that out here, people look at you like they don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah, they're always like, where are you from?
But Virginia, so the virus that is quote-unquote keeping you from having cancer is not a cancer-stopping vaccination.
About HPV.
Yeah, that's what it is. So it's it's called Gardasil or something like that. Yeah, Gardasil is a vaccine, and they really started marketing it really hard, like on MTV to girls who are 13 to 16 or something like that, and they wanted everyone to get vaccinated. So if you have a daughter and you want to do that one, my recommendation is to first watch the documentary called The Greater Good. They talk a lot about that vaccine in that documentary, and they say that they've had over 18,000 injuries reported, more than 85 deaths, but they really feature a girl who was like a little cheerleader in middle school or something, and after she got the vaccine, she can't really do anything anymore. Like, it really hit her very hard and affected her health in a huge way. So, but, cervical cancer is a really big deal. You know, that's a major problem that we're dealing with. So when something comes out that could possibly, basically eradicate that, that's a very exciting. And so I do think that there could be things that they figure out, but they did this particular vaccine ended up getting fast tracked, which means that it didn't spend the 4 or 5 years through trials like it's supposed to. They did some trials with a couple thousand people, and in a matter of like 16 months or something, they permitted it to hit the market, and it turns out that they didn't do enough because it's causing, or it was causing, a lot of problems. I'm not even sure where it is now, but I think that they need to be a little more strict with trying these things out a lot longer before they're just going to dump it on the market to make a bucket of money. But you know, if that's possible to remove a virus like that, or the ability to catch a virus that's causing problems like that, that would be a very exciting thing. But the problem is we're not doing that, that we are all part of this experiment that's going on right now. And we talk about the fact, last week we talked about the scientist who had done the test with aluminum and showed all of this destruction to the motor neurons and stuff in the brain that looks similar to Alzheimer's. And we look at all these people now who are not being affected with these neurological issues or autism type problems from the vaccines. And we don't know what's going to happen to them in 20 years. You know, we know that Alzheimer's is increasing now from, and it appears to be from a lot of the heavy metal loads that we're all experiencing for different reasons. But is 40 going to be the new age when people start to have Alzheimer's? We have no idea.
And then they don't know how to link it back to the vaccine, because they're like, oh, this just happened to me, it's in my genes, or blah, 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 blah. So they don't actually know that, hey, maybe that vaccine that I was vaccinated with when I was a kid is what's causing this.
Right. So in 20 years, we could be seeing a whole new array of problems. It would make sense, according to what makes sense, at least in my head right now, because the cases of autism that I have seen one-on-one, and the people that I know that have autistic kids, and the number that I just know personally is pretty large, that when we have done steps that would reduce heavy metals and lift mineral levels to allow the body to reduce or to let go of heavy metals, the differences that the kid has experienced is dramatic. Like, it's unbelievable. So if some of these people are currently in a situation where they can deal with that heavy metal load, what happens 30 years from now? Do they start to have experience these dementia type things when they're 42?
Are you asking me?
Kenna, tell us what's going to happen.
I'll tell you.
Was that on your script?
No, I lost my script. I had the answer on there.
Yeah. So it's kind of tricky, because a lot of these things could be bringing great benefit, which is great. That would be awesome. You know, it appears that way in some cases. And then it absolutely seems false in other cases. And it seems like, you know, data was kind of moved around to make it look that way. But are we going to find later that the benefits that we're seeing now, by restricting some of these diseases from spreading more, is the payoff going to be bigger than we thought? We don't know.
I don't know. All right. Carol, I do think some vaccines have value for children, but I really worry about them getting multiple different ones in the same day. Their little bodies can't take it. Vaccines do suppress the immune system. We also give too many vaccines, period.
And I think that's the thing. And I think that we all kind of agree on that, that, yeah, there's got to be some that could be bringing some benefit to us, and that maybe are now, but maybe the load is too much. You know, especially when you're looking at babies, because with a pregnant woman, they tell us now, don't eat fish, because you don't want to increase the mercury level in that baby. You're going to create early.
But let's give them vaccines when they're...
Yeah, but as soon as they come out, let's jam it right in there.
Yeah.
So you avoided all that fish for nothing, and maybe the fish was going to be delicious.
I mean, I think we could usually learn a lot from a few of the European countries that are more honest and have a better structure to their regulating bodies. It's like, yeah, maybe we should drop down to 12, like,
right,
whatever those 12 are. And maybe it's different, like there's different disease exposure, but I doubt it. I would assume that they have, like, maybe some more conservative policies. And
yeah, and I would be happy with this. Okay, I understand the viewpoint that you have that makes you think that every kid needs to be vaccinated to keep things from spreading. So maybe you pick a number that's reasonable to mandate, and then offer 75 other vaccines for any parent that wants to do that. But to mandate them, I think it's causing problems.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too, to like, some parents will argue like, oh, you have to vaccinate your kids or else you put us all at risk. It's like, well, you're not going to be at risk if you vaccinated your kid. And yeah. Things, right? So don't worry.
Good one.
You know, if it actually works, don't worry about it.
Yeah, touche.
Right. And we talked last week about, you know, most of the breakouts like measles and stuff like that. CDC even puts on their website that most of those breakouts actually occur in vaccinated kids. It's not the dirty unvaccinated kids that are causing the actual problem. Right. So that needs to be taken into account as well. So it's just the extreme that's going on, I think, in our country that is causing the extreme situations that we're seeing. And I don't know that it's going to be fixed. I think it's going to end up getting worse. And like Will said last week, it's going to go beyond kids. It's going to go to adults, to where they're going to mandate things that we have to
do. Will you move out of the country, Tony?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm not helping you move.
Okay.
Hey, we're going to need you to move these boxes to Canada.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if you can come in on Sunday.
That'd be great. Okay.
So we added these links. There are a couple things worth checking out, especially the link of that video on the show notes. Check that out. But let's say that you're an expecting parent and that you're really doing a lot of research and that's how you found this show. My recommendation is to do at least a little bit of research on both sides. So the easiest thing to do is just watch some documentaries, because you just sit there like you're watching a movie. You could even eat popcorn, and that's fine. But I would watch the pro-vaccination movie, Calling All the Shots. Will and I watched that one. I would also watch the movie called The Greater Good and Vaccine Nation, which is the one that Gary Null did. And to give yourself a rounded viewpoint, along with information from both sides, so that you can see what makes sense in your brain. The only thing I recommend not doing is just blindly doing whatever people say to do, because it seems like some of those things are not that great.
But like these states that are like, you have to legally, what do? You just wait until the last possible minute to make the time longer, or you just have to like do what they say?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of parents now are homeschooling and of course they may be changing that as well.
Sarah's going to homeschool.
So You just don't know.
Me and Nina will be homeschooling.
Yeah, you're in charge of the homeschool.
Can you imagine that kid would know nothing? Nothing.
So it's a tricky situation. And that's really the conclusion that we come to, is that it's a tricky situation, but just don't go into it blindly. If you look at the information and kind of try to negotiate it a little bit, then maybe you can figure out what's best for you and your kids and the best way to go through it. But man, it's uncool.
Yeah. And also, like you mentioned last week, to try to, especially in months preceding and following the times when like your kids might need to be vaccinated, like do extra to help bolster their immune system and make sure like they're doing other stuff to really nourish themselves, like whether it's bone broth or extra vitamin C's and things like that.
Yeah, I did see one person that talked about like they might make the smallpox vaccine mandatory for every human being. Like that's what there's a bill trying to push that right now. Mm-hmm. And she talked about steps of taking, you know, 5 days before, really load up on vitamin C that same day, that continue the following day. And so, you know, maybe that's things that you do to set yourself up better so that it doesn't affect you so much. Cause we know that people get vaccinated and they're fine forever from it. So there has to be reasons that their body can handle it and someone else's body can't. So if you're in a situation where you feel like you have to vaccinate your child or yourself, put everything you can in your favor, help your body work at its optimal level so that it can deal with the hardship.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. Audible is giving away a free
Audible.com.
Audible.com. Just by saying audible.com, you'll get a free listen of anything you want. No, go to, what is it, kickitinthenuts.com/audible.
Audiobook.
Audiobooks. It's because I was vaccinated, y'all. Uh-huh. So anyways, do that. And if you would like to learn more about, or for your family, or...
Man, this is going well.
Wow,
you can take Will and Tony's pro. Oh, God, this is bad.
Oh, man. I was just thinking last week, why does Kenneth still use all those scripts because for the ads? Yeah,
I didn't sit down and learn it. Maybe I should sit down and like really, really learn it, like I learn lines. Mm-hmm. How do I do lines?
Yeah, you know? I don't even know.
Okay, healthprocourse.com.
Yeah, right. Do that. Just go, go there. Go to healthprocourse.com.
Yeah. And then if you want to do the 4-week digestion course, it's almost free. It's 50 cents. Uh-huh. You go to kickitnaturally for that.
Kickitnaturally.com.
Good. And then you can do the almost free digestion course or read any of TC's books or go to willsmybodyofknowledge.net and, you know, you can see his blogs, his exercises. Maybe it's just like a blanket.
Yeah.
A security blanket because right. Now it's not in my hand. So now everything just went out the window.
Awesome. So thanks so much for listening and congratulations to everyone who won prizes last week. Woo! And if you want to be entered in our next prize giveaway, not sure when we're doing that, but just leave us a review at iTunes or Stitcher and we'll automatically put you in there. So we'll see you next week.
All right, guys.
Bye, Will.
Bye.
Oh my God, I got to find that script.